Yeah, I understand the title of the meeting is Lenin, His Life and Ideas, which is a huge subject, as you can imagine. And therefore, given the fact that I haven't got a lot of time, I'll try and telescope this as much as possible and concentrate on some of the key features. Clearly, again, as the poster said in advertising the meeting, that Lenin is undoubtedly one of the most slandered individuals, not only the 20th century, but probably in history. And the fundamental reason for this is due to the fact he was the leader of the Russian Revolution of October 1917, the first time where capitalism was overthrown and the working class came to power under the leadership of the Bolsheviks. And their perspective was to change the world, and therefore all those capitalists of the establishment, the bankers, all those who had a vested interest in maintaining the capitalist system, clearly saw it as an important thing as to discredit as far as possible Lenin, the Russian Revolution, in order to prevent any future generations, any young people in particular, who are beginning to question capitalism, that they wouldn't see the Russian Revolution or Lenin's ideas as an alternative. And therefore, year in, year out, many books have been produced about Lenin, his life, his ideas, you name it, they've been produced in order to fulfill this function of discrediting him and the Russian Revolution. And I did see the other day one particular book by, I don't know if you've seen it, Professor Robert Service, who has written a three-volume book, or volume history of the Russian Revolution, particularly of Lenin, called Lenin, A Political Life. And in the preface, he makes the point, although this volume is intended as a balanced, multifaceted account, nobody can write detachedly about Lenin. His intolerance and repressiveness continues to appall me. He goes on to say how describe Lenin as a ruthless terrorist, power crazy. There's horrors which he had perpetrated between 1917 and 1922. Policies and attitude of Lenin and Stalin were not very far apart. Without Lenin, says this guy, moreover, Stalinism in the Soviet Union would have been impossible. So he starts his stall out, really, that Lenin is a terrorist, a dictator, suppressed rights, suppressed people, and really laid the foundations for this monstrosity of Stalinism. And it's all down to Lenin, the Bolsheviks, and that's why revolution's a bad idea, because you'll always end up in totalitarian dictatorship and so on and so forth. And those ideas have been repeated and repeated every year, year in, year out, in universities, colleges, you name it. This is the main campaign. So we have to understand where these people are coming from, and obviously it's to distort, not to understand, not to explain, but to distort in order to undermine and therefore to try and blacken the name of the revolution and of Lenin. Now, from the point of view of the man, Lenin himself was a revolutionary, if you like, from his head to his tips of his toes. He was born in 1870 in Simbirsk, which is on the Volga, from quite a well-to-do middle-class family, quite a privileged background. He obviously grew up in the 1870s, the 1880s in Russia, which coincided to a large degree of a tremendous change taking place within Russian society. In a nutshell, Russian society had been dominated by Tsarism for 1,000 years. That is a very repressive autocracy based mainly on feudalism and the exploitation of the peasantry. In fact, it was in 1861 that the serfs were emancipated in Russia. There was an influx of foreign capital into Russia, particularly in the cities, from France, Britain, Germany, and so on. which built big industries. If you like, Russia was going through a period, you might say, of combined and uneven development. Extremely backward on the one hand, a population of 150 million or so, the vast majority were of peasants. The working class was very, very small, very tiny, and was concentrated in the main cities of St. Petersburg and of Moscow. But this working class was a very new working class in the sense that the new industries that were built in Russia basically tore the peasantry out of its existence and made them workers overnight. And therefore, it was a very rapid development of the working class, a bit like, I suppose, you could say, China today, with its massive industrialization. A lot of peasants have been thrown into industry and were open to all sorts of ideas, including revolutionary ideas, as we'll see. But at this time, there's also a ferment amongst the intelligentsia of the students, which were looking for the most progressive, and were looking for a way out, how to get rid of Tsarism, how to drag Russia into the 20th century. And they turned to what you might call terrorist politics. There was an organization called the People's Will and the Rodniks, which were established at that time, whose aim was to eliminate Tsarism by physically murdering the top officials, Tsarist officials, including the Tsar. In fact, Lenin's brother joined this organization, was older than Lenin, and he was hanged in 1887, if I'm not mistaken. When Lenin was 17 years of age, he was hanged for participating in an attempt to murder the Tsar. And this had a profound effect on Lenin, who began to look for a way out of society, out of the mess that Russia was in, and was very interested in socialist ideas, which began to percolate at that particular time in Russia. Of course, in the other European countries, socialism was beginning to also to revive in quite a big way. And Lenin also began to study Marxist ideas. At this time, Marx's writings were being translated into Russian. And at the young age of 17, Lenin was reading a book called Anti-During, which was a big philosophical writing, a polemic at the time, produced by Engels, which had a profound effect on him. And the ideas of Marxism had a profound effect. That is, that capitalism was a mere stage in the development of history, and on the basis of it was based on exploitation, and that a new society could be built, a class of society built on socialist foundations, whereby private property would be eliminated, but it couldn't exist in backward countries. It would be built on a world scale, because on the world scale, capitalism had developed a huge productive force and basis that could be used for the benefit of the mass of the population, reorganized on socialist lines. Lenin himself went to university in Kazan, I believe it was. Being a good student, that's right, he was expelled within 1 month. So it didn't last long as a student at that time. He then went back to private study and reapplied for a university entry in St. Petersburg, in the capital. And he managed to get into the university in 1890, where he began to study law and also used a lot of his free time to study Marxism and how to look at the role of the working class interested him. And he also began to read and also correspond with, you could say, the father of Russian Marxism was a man called Plekhanov, who was living in exile in Zurich at this particular time. But throughout his studies, he began to organise Marxist circles. At this time in Russia, lots of circles on socialism and Marxism were being established. And Lenin established one in Petersburg at this moment. He went abroad to visit a group called the Emancipation of Labour Group, which was founded by this Plekhanov and other Russian revolutionaries who couldn't work in Russia at that time, or found it very difficult because the autocracy was a dictatorship. It was illegal. There were no Marxism, socialism, all this was illegal. And therefore they did a lot of their work abroad in exile. And Lenin went to see and discuss with these individuals and came back to Petersburg with the idea of establishing a newspaper called Workers' Cause, which he began to do. And of course, once he started to do that, he was arrested, he was imprisoned, and after 2 years, he was then sentenced to internal exile, which meant going to Siberia. And he spent what the period of 3 years from 1897 to the year 1900 in Siberia. After his time was up, he came back not only to Petersburg but went into exile to Germany in order to work with the other Russian revolutionaries at the time to try and develop the Marxist movement. At this point, there was no political workers' parties in Russia, and they tried to establish a workers' party in 1898, and they had a conference in Minsk, and immediately all the delegates were arrested. So it didn't last very long, and they were all put into jail, and that was the end of it. There was an attempt then to re-establish this party, and the party's name was the Russian Social Democrat or Democratic Labour Party. And the second congress of this organisation was held in 1903. And in the preparations for this, Lenin wrote, had a lot of discussions and wrote some important documents and articles about the importance of a workers' paper. And in 1900, they established this paper called Iskra, the Spark. And it was edited abroad and sent into, smuggled into Russia and circulated in Russia. Basically, after a couple of years, the German press that was printing it decided not to print it because they were fearful that they would be jailed because of libel and all the rest of it. And it was decided they would move to London. And in 1902, not so far away from here, we pass it on the way down near King's Cross. And tomorrow they're going to start from a place Clerkenwell Green, and there's a place there called Mark's House, and he used to go there probably every day. And there's a little room up there called Lenin's Room. It's about a quarter of the size of this place, where he edited Iskra and wrote articles of Where to Begin and a very famous book called What is to Be Done. And What is to Be Done was a book about how to organise a revolutionary movement in Russia, the principles of organising revolutionary work against other ideas that were circulating at the time, called mainly the economist ideas, that the working class should only be struggling on economic demands, whereas Lenin explained, no, that's a falsehood. You have to introduce political ideas into the working class, and we need to create a party based on professional revolutionaries. And this was in a nutshell, obviously it's more to it than that, was the main theme that was produced in What is to Be Done. They basically, this was preparatory work up until the second Congress in 1903. And at this Congress, it's well known, it's a very famous Congress because a dispute took place. After all the days they've been discussing, there was a complete agreement, and the people around Iskra, which was Lenin, Plekhanov, Zasulich, and a whole number of others, Martov and other people, they carried the day on all the major political questions. And a split took place in the final part of the conference over the composition of an editorial board and the definition of what a member should be. Seems very secondary. And a split took place between what is called then the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks, the majority and the minority. That's all it came from, the Bolshevik word for majority being Bolshevik, and the Mensheviks being in the minority. And this split came from out of the blue. No, the hell, what? Oh, they couldn't believe it. And later on, it could be seen. It was like an anticipation of what was going to come in the future. And it was a forerunner of political differences which were going to develop in the future on the basis of events. And they could be summed up in a short way, that the Mensheviks believed, well, they all believed really, that the revolution coming in Russia was going to be a bourgeois revolution, a capitalist revolution, We're bringing, democracy, bringing constituent assembly, 7-hour working day, all the attributes of a modern kind of economy, the idea. And they all believe this should be the case. The autocracy should be removed, czarism should be done away with, a revolution should take place. A bit like revolutions that took place earlier on in other capitalist countries, going back for a long time, even in Britain and France, had their revolutions. We had our civil war in the 1640s, the French Revolution had its revolution, and they hoped there'd be another revolution. But they thought, well, who's going to lead this revolution? And the Mensheviks believed should be the capitalists. The up-and-coming bourgeois should be leading a capitalist revolution. It was Lenin said, well, hang on a minute, these capitalists are hand in glove with the landlords and the czarist officials and so on and so forth. They can't play a real revolutionary role. It should be the working class that leads this revolution, because they are the real revolutionary class. This could galvanise behind them the peasantry, which is a large component of the population. And that's where the disagreements began to take place. We'll see that emerging in a minute. The big thing after that conference was the revolution in Russia, which took place in 1905. Again, an amazing change in the situation, because Russia was not only backward, but Russian society was the most conservative, reactionary force in the whole of Europe. It's a bit like, in a sense, like American imperialism today on a world scale. So at that time, it was Russia and the Russian autocracy were playing and meddling in European affairs in a very, very reactionary, conservative way. And the revolution, which started, in January 1905, on the basis of a petition of workers behind Father Gapon, presented a petition to the Tsar from the poor of Petrograd, please offer some concessions and so on. And they were repressed. They were shot, and the movement was dispersed. And the very act of suppressing the revolution, suppressing this request, this modest request, resulted in revolution developing from below. And factories going on strike for a whole year this lasted, from January to October in particular, and November. You have this movement of strike, of developing revolution, and so on, throughout the whole of Russia. And concessions are granted by the Tsar in order to try and placate the situation. It leads all the way up to a general strike in Petrograd, or rather St. Petersburg, as it was still called at that time, in 1905. A Soviet was created. For the first time in history, a workers' council was created. A Soviet, that's the Russian word for a council. Where different factories and so on sent delegates, selected delegates to this like Congress of Labour, if you like, to try and to articulate its views and so on and so forth. I haven't got time to go into the experiences or lessons of the 1905 revolution. All I have to say is this was a new phenomenon. Leon Trotsky became the head of the Petrograd Soviet, but they were all arrested. And the revolution was defeated, and after that there was a period of reaction in Russian society, of black reaction. Many revolutionaries committed suicide. There was a whole period of terrible demoralization that took place, and so on and so forth. And black reaction ruled for a whole period of years, right up, you could say, until 1912, when there was an economic revival in Russia, and with the economic revival became a strike wave, and with that a political revival. And at that time a definite split took place between the Second Congress in 1903. The Bolsheviks and Mensheviks were still in the same party. They were two different wings of the same party. By 1912 they'd split, and the Bolsheviks had become an independent party and put forward a newspaper called Pravda, the Truth, which got enormous circulation. In fact, it's estimated that of those who could read and write, about 4/5 of the working class in Petrograd and in St. Petersburg and in Moscow supported generally the position of the Bolshevik Party. So this movement towards Marxism or a revival of the workers' movement was quite a radical change in the situation. However, the big, event to cut across this process was the First World War. In August 1914, the World War broke out. First was in Germany and Britain, France, and so on. All the powers were then sucked into this war, which was characterised by Lenin, the Marxist, as an imperialist war to divide up the world amongst the different superpowers that it, or the imperialist powers which had come into existence. And the problem was that the international organisation of the working class, which had passed, all the workers in different countries, which had passed resolutions previously to oppose the war, even with a general strike, all of them capitulated, at least the vast majority capitulated. And they all supported their own ruling classes of going to war, one pretext after another. Except in Russia, the Bolsheviks opposed the war. Also the Mensheviks opposed the war. In Germany, a handful of the Germany had a big working class party. The German Social Democratic Party was huge at that particular time. Unfortunately, the leaders capitulated, and the left wing around Rosa Luxemburg at that moment came out and said, "Well, this international of ours is a stinking corpse. It's not fit for purpose." All the international, everywhere it was, again, black reaction, because all the ruling classes were dominant, the war was taking place, the workers' organisations were supporting the war, or were pushed to one side. It seemed that it was just a complete dark scenario for the world working class. In fact, it was only a handful of people who opposed the war on internationalist lines. The Bolsheviks, the Mensheviks, the Serb Social Democracy, James Connolly in Ireland, John McLean in Scotland, Trotsky, who wasn't in the Bolshevik Party at that time, or in the Mensheviks, he was at an independent position. They had a conference in Zimmerwald in 1915, and this conference, held in Switzerland, in a very small, isolated location. Lenin, I think they had two stagecoaches of people, took the delegates to this conference, and Lenin joked in the conference himself, saying, "Well, the whole of the internationalists of the world could be crammed into two stagecoaches." That's the situation at the moment. However, despite that fact, Lenin was very optimistic that on the basis of events, revolution could develop, and with that, the revitalization of the labour movement. And he thought that the Second International was a stinking corpse, that a new international organisation should be created based upon international socialism, based on workers' solidarity, based on Marxism, of class struggle, and so on and so forth. And not what had already happened, a capitulation to imperialism and a justification of what he saw was social chauvinism, that is, reformism and linking up class collaboration and so on, which was evident at the moment. But of course, they were a small handful, so it was very difficult to do much. And during the war, things were held back, although movements did take place. In Germany, for instance, there were strikes against the war, which is not known about. Karl Liebknecht was one of the leaders of the left wing of the social democracy in Germany. He was an MP. He voted against the war credits and led an anti-war movement, and he became a symbol of this anti-war field in Germany. And the more that the war went on, with the defeats, the bloodshed, the misery, the squalor, the hardship, the famine, all those things began to change the outlook of ordinary working people who were against the war. They wanted peace, against the exploitation, against those people who were making a lot of money out of the war effort as well, who were making excess profits, etc., etc. And